Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live on our cyber-based radio network, which includes listeners in over 40 countries around the world. We're now broadcasting our 189th episode. You know, that's just under 4 years, and we're always glad when you listen in. Let's introduce our host for tonight's show. Neil, who do you see there on your producer's board?
Golly, Jim, we have a whole board here all lit up, but I know that we do have Steve Thompson couldn't make it tonight. And instead, of course, working with us as a host also is Gay Harvey. Gay, how are things in your area?
Everything's great down here in the Low Country. Just a beautiful fall day here.
Now, you say the Low Country. Where is the Low Country?
The coast of South Carolina.
All right, around the Hilton Head
all the way
area?
Up and down.
Okay,
I'm near
that's
Hilton
called,
Head.
That's called the Low Country. All right, like
yeah.
Piedmont over in North Carolina is called the Piedmont area. All right, I think I can live with that.
Okay.
Thanks for being with us, Gay. Mm-hmm. Chuck Albright over there in Central Florida, close to the villages. Chuck, how are things down in Golfton world?
We are just doing fine. We've had a little bit of rain the last couple of days, but that hasn't stopped our 130,000 people from getting out on our 53 golf courses. They seem to flood everything from the golf course. The water doesn't seem too much problem to them. Other than that, I think we're going to end out the end of the week. We've had some really nice weather. You guys up north sent down a little cool weather here, and we really appreciate it. I think we're going to be down to 57 tonight. So we're going to get our PJs on and turn the heat up. Back to you.
Oh, this is the perfect weather for Florida. It really is great here. And over there, and let's see, who else do we have? Cecile Entriago in South Florida. Cecile, hello.
Hello, and it's absolutely gorgeous weather, beautiful skies. I took the day off and flew a kite with my grandson, which kite we did make. So it was absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Good for you. And then let's see. Who else do we have? We have two New York folks that represent us well in the New York area on Long Island. And we have Frank and we have George Jen. George Jen out on the island. How are you, George?
Well, I'm fine, Neil. Thank you for asking. And it was a beautiful autumn day here with the temperature probably pretty close to what it was in Central Florida. Next couple of days is supposed to be the same way.
Oh, okay, great. Good time to be in New York. I wish I had a New York layover. Wouldn't that be great?
There you
Frank,
go.
How are you? You're right there, Frank, and where are you in New York?
I'm on Long Island, further east of George. And weather here has been wonderful for this time of year, but we're looking for a dip in the temperature the coming weekend.
Frank, when you say you're further east than George,
yeah.
How much further? There's the ocean right close to Long Island, right?
Well, Long Island's 110 miles long.
Okay, how wide?
About 15, 20.
Okay, about 20 miles wide. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Okay, I'm learning my geography tonight.
We'll keep you abreast of it.
Okay. All right. And did I leave out anyone except Jim
only
Hart?
Only Jim Hart.
Only Jim Hart. Jim, go ahead and tell me how things are your way.
I'll tell you, this last weekend, Neil, was a beautiful weekend. In fact, Cecile was in Miami. We had on Friday our annual EARA picnic. We had about 200 people there. Vito was there. We had a good time telling about the Eastern Airlines radio show. And I think we also mentioned about the people that we'd like to, if they want to go on the first trip, to go ahead. But this was a fantastic area. We were hoping, or Vito was hoping, that President Ed Wiechel might have been able to show up. But I'm sure at this time he is probably over his head in all kinds of activities to try to get this airline going. And so I can understand it that he didn't show. We did give away quite a few free passes on various airlines, and there were some airlines I never had even heard of. But I should say that one of our chapter members, that's the West Palm Beach chapter members, was a winner. I believe it was a dinner for two at the Outback Steakhouse, and that was Carol, who was here. We had 9 members from our West Palm Beach chapter at the Miami annual picnic. That was really good. But today, now here in West Palm Beach, we've had rain for about the last 36 or 40 hours. Would you believe this afternoon the sun came out? It was beautiful, but it's still a little bit cool. It's still in the low 70s. Hey, which to me, that's fine. I'm from Maine. I can handle anything like that, that's for sure. But that's what we have from here, Neil. Back to you, sir.
Well, also, 305, could that be Vito with us tonight?
Yeah, I'm on.
Hey,
hi, Neil.
Good to have you with us, Vito. How's things down your way?
Okay, very good. We had a nice afternoon. We had a rainy morning, but this afternoon it cleared up real nice. And just like Jim said, we had a wonderful time on Friday. We gave away a lot of passes and a lot of gifts, and we talked very highly about the Eastern radio show, and Jim did a great job. He was my speaker. So we had a wonderful time. So thanks for your work.
What a dynamic duo, Vito Borelli and Jim Hart. Wow. That ought to be a radio show with those two guys. Jim Hart, I'm not telling folks how to reach us.
I gave the information today to we're kind of putting together the final part of the monthly newspaper. It closes out in a few days. But I did put a message in there about who to see and who to call. Cecile Intriago, she's the one that's taking names for the possible trip to San Juan, Puerto Rico. So it will be in our paper. So hopefully we might be able to have 2 airplanes going over there.
Yeah, and Cecile was also at the picnic.
What?
Yeah, Cecile was at the picnic. All right, well, Cecile, you got a lot to tell us tonight, I guess.
Yeah, she did a good job.
Very good, very good.
Yeah. George, we promoted your book at the picnic also. We announced your book. And
thank you very much.
We're going to talk about the flight later, and I'll bring you up to date what happened at the picnic on the flight. Right, Neil?
All right. Yeah, sure. We've got a great show for you tonight. Jim, how about telling folks how to reach us and all about the telephone number?
If you've listened to our past shows, you know that we can be reached online during our live broadcast. Our numbers, once again, are 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers. They are 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Remember, when calling the show, to be sure to press number one on your telephone button if you wish to connect live with those of us hosts. Neil, it's up to you.
Well, let's see. I'm looking at our chat line. Our chat line, also visible here on the studio's screen here, I guess that's what we call it. I call this a kitchen table radio show, but we are cyber. And I do have the advantage of seeing those folks that are calling in to listen to the show and perhaps contributing their thoughts to the show, and we hope that be the case. And we also see a chat section here on my board, and I see Beverly LaPointe. Golly, I wish Beverly would, if she's on the line, I wish she would. She usually listens in on the chat side, but Beverly, if you're here with us tonight and you've got your telephone there, say hello. Apparently she's not
hooked
up to the telephone. Hello. But we do have a number of folks that have called in. Just as a reminder to our listeners, you can tune us in by going to www.EALradioshow.com. Very simple, EALradioshow.com, and click the arrow in the circle on the radio icon. Or you can go to our sponsor, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's website, and clicking the radio shows icon on their homepage, and they are at www.repaonline.com. Jim, back to you.
Well, yeah, thanks, Neil. Hey, how about starting that beautiful round engine?
Well, if I can find the start button on that engine, let's see if I've got it.
There it is.
Well, we've got breaking news. Okay?
Breaking news, breaking news. Eastern Airlines this week will take delivery of its first Boeing 737-800. Today, the former Kenyan Airways Boeing 737-8AL-5YKYB was rolled out of the AirTech hangar at Shannon in full Eastern livery. The 737 is named the Spirit of Captain Eddie Rickenbacker and will become N-276EA on delivery. N-276EA is due to arrive in Miami later this month. Our show this week centers on the Boeing family of aircraft in the jet age. The Boeing 707 revolutionized air travel and kicked the jet age into top gear. Commercial flight today owes it everything. Jonathan Glancy writes, whenever Frank Sinatra sang, "Come fly with me, let's fly away," the image of a Boeing 707, all etched white vapor trails jetting across some deep blue transcontinental stratosphere, could never be far from mind. This song was from Sinatra's album of the same name. It was released in January 1958, a month after the epical swept-wing jet airliner made its maiden flight. Before the year was out, the sleek 707 was in service with Pan Am. It was to change the way we fly and see the world. Curiously, the graphic designer working for Capitol Records appeared to have been behind the times. Artwork for the Come Fly With Me shows a snappily dressed Sinatra taking the hand of a girl as he cocks his thumb toward the TWA Lockheed Constellation, the last of the great American piston engine airliners. Constellations were to be pushed aside by the all-conquering 707, an aircraft synonymous with the new jet age and a design that led, step by rapid step, to the Boeing 747 jumbo jet and the era of mass air travel. The 707 might have been one of the most glamorous of all forms of transport when it entered service with Pan Am. Yet its very success led ultimately to the horrendous and heartbreakingly banal conditions the majority of us fly in today.
As for Sinatra, he was so admired the new 707, the aircraft that should have been on the sleeve of Come Fly With Me, that he bought his very own. It was an ex-Qantas 707, built in 1964. That, and since 1998, has belonged to John Travolta, the Hollywood star, and he is a pilot. Travolta's estate is in Florida and has its own runway. Some people like to gaze at the curves of their prized classic car, or even the latest Ferrari. Travolta opted for the sight of a four-engine, 600-mile-an-hour jet. Pan Am introduced the Boeing 707 in 1957, inaugurating the jet age. The 707 began as a discussion and some sketches in 1949 when Boeing's engineer Ed Wallace and George Kinnear and John Alexander began thinking about a swept-wing jet airliner. Boeing was an innovative company, and its aircraft were second to none. George Wells, for example, appointed Boeing chief engineer in 1943 and had worked on the design of his famous B-17 Flying Fortress bomber, of which 12,731 were built. Boeing subsequent B-29 Super Fortress and the B-47 Stratojet and the B-52 Stratofortress bombers were all aviation milestones and commercially successful in the field of civil aviation. However, Boeing played a very junior fiddle to its rival Douglas of the DC-3 Dakota fame, and the Lockheed with its pre-war Electra and post-war Constellation. In fact, Boeing had lost money on virtually all its airliners, including its latest and last piston engine design, the 377 Stratocruiser, of which 47 were built for a deficit of $13 million. George?
The British were the first to build a jet airliner, the de Havilland Comet. It went into service with BOAC in 1952, but several fatal accidents caused by airframe failure led to its withdrawal. The French and the Russians were pushing ahead with jet designs, but the tussle for the global jet market was essentially between Douglas and Boeing. Boeing was first into the air with its 367-80, or -80, the prototype of the 707, which made its maiden flight in July of 1954. It was powered by a version of the same Pratt & Whitney jet turbojets fitted to USAFF-100 Super Sabre fighter jets and B-52 Stratofortresses. The -80 was very fast. No passenger aircraft had flown at 550 miles per hour in level flight before. It could handle well also. In August of 1955, Tex Johnston, Boeing's chief test pilot, barrel-rolled the precious aircraft over Lake Washington. While this is not something any of us would want our pilots to do while passengers toy with their cocktails at 35,000 feet over the Atlantic, potential buyers watching from the ground that summer day could hardly fail to have been impressed. Boeing's 367-80, or -80, the prototype of the 707, made its maiden voyage in July of 1954, according to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. The race was on, though, between Douglas, which had yet to build its superficially almost identical DC-8, and Boeing. Pan Am, the airline forever associated with the 707, ordered 20 707s and, at the very same time, 25 DC-8s. What was holding Boeing back was the fact that the 707 was narrower and slightly smaller than the DC-8. When William Allen, Boeing's president, offered American Airlines an extra half inch in width over the DC-8, he won an order for 50 707s. From that moment on, the sales success of the Boeing 707 was assured. Cecile?
Boeing built 1,010 707s for commercial airlines between 1958 and 78, and further 800 for the military up until 1991, while Douglas assembled 556 DC-8s between 58 and 72. Allen had invested, or as the media like to say, gambled, $135 million on the 707 program, or more than the net worth of Boeing at the time. Although 707s were not particularly profitable, there were many variations, and the company bent over backwards to please customers. The aircraft's dominance of intercontinental flight in the 60s led to profitable future airliners, including the jumbo, and to a point when three-quarters of all civil airlines were Boeings. A lyrical promotional film from 59, The Wonderful Jet World of Pan American, captures the magic of flying by 707 in an era when passengers dressed up to fly, when air crews were seen as glamorous, and when the age of no-frills budget airlines was also but inconceivable. What is fascinating is just how much attention Pan Am devoted to its beloved airliners. Today, the millions of casually dressed passengers squeezed onto look-alike aircraft rarely glance at the machines that will wing them across continents. Airlines, meanwhile, sell themselves through the cheap fares, in-flight entertainment, and destinations rather than aircraft themselves. Boeing, though, has persevered, promoting its latest 787 as a dreamliner, even when most flights are nightmares. John Travolta owns a 707, which he keeps at his home in Anthony, Florida. The Boeing 707 had, of course, been designed for a less crowded age. Even so, it was stretched over time with later models, seating up to 189 passengers. The airlines it served from the beginning, Pan Am TWA, have long gone, while Saha Air, an airline based in Tehran, ceased active operations last year, and with it, the world's last 707s in regular passenger service. Jim?
You know, they're hugely popular in its heyday and a symbol of a new high-flying age powered by forward-looking technology and design. The 707 featured not just in films and songs, but in fashionable product launches like Janssen's 1957 707 swimwear. Films like Boeing, 1965, starring Jerry Lewis and Tony Curtis, are probably best forgotten. Come Fly With Me, a British effort from 1963, is far worse. But the aircraft itself remains a superb achievement, a magnificent commercial gamble, and a truly great design. If it ain't Boeing, went the cliche, I'm not going. The 707 was not perfect, but today, by today's standards, it was a noisy gas guzzler. But for better or worse, it changed the way we fly. Now let's look about the New Eastern's Boeing. And this is something that ought to pique your interest. It's the Boeing 737-800. The Boeing 737 is a short to medium-range twin jet, narrow-body airliner, originally developed as a shorter, low-cost twin-engine airliner. It derived from the Boeing 707 and 727. The 737 has developed into a family of nine passenger models with a capacity of 85 to 250 passengers. The 737 is Boeing's only narrow-body airliner in production. With the 700, the 800, and the 900ER variants currently being built, a re-engined and redesigned version, the 737 MAX, is set to debut in 2017. John?
This is Chuck. John's not here tonight. Originally envisioned in 1964, the initial 737-100 flew in 1967 and entered airline service in February 1968. Next, the length of the 737-200 entered service in April 1968. In the 1980s, Boeing launched the 300, the 400, and 500 models, subsequently referring to as Boeing's 737 class series. The 737 class added capacity and incorporated the CFM56 turbofan engines, along with wing improvements. And in 1990, Boeing introduced the 737 Next Generation with multiple changes, including a redesigned wing, an upgraded cockpit, a new interior. The 737 Next Generator compromises the four 600, 700, 800, and 900 ER range models, ranging from 102 feet to 138 feet in length. Boeing Business Jets versions of the 737 Next Generation are also produced. The 737 series is the best-selling jet airliner in the history of aviation. The 737 has been continually manufactured by Boeing since 1967, with 8,263 aircraft delivered, 4,037 orders yet to be fulfilled as of October 2014. 737 assembly is centered at the Boeing Rattan factory in Renton, Washington. Many 737s serve markets previously filled by 707s, 727s, 757s, DC-9s, MD-80, MD-90 airliners, and aircraft currently competes primarily with the Airbus A320 family. There are 1,250 Boeing 737s airborne at any given time on the average, with two departing or landing somewhere every 5 seconds as of 2006. The prototype Dash 800 rolled out on June 30, 1997, and flew on July 31, 1997. Jim?
Of course, the old Eastern Airlines did not have Boeing 737s of any series, instead choosing to go with the Douglas DC-9 aircraft of its size. My thoughts about the DC-9, Boeing 727, 757 aircraft. Yeah, let's talk about those, but Eastern chose the Boeings over the Douglas aircraft, and we did have a many numbered DC-9s in our fleet with the old Eastern Airlines. And Frank, how did these airplanes work out with you guys on the ground crew's point of view? Frank?
Which one in particular? We used them on the shuttle a lot, the DC-9s, and then we went into the, we had 727s flying the shuttle, and we also had the, what was it, the A300 on the shuttle. And,
well, Frank, which was the easiest to serve of the 727 and DC-9 on the shuttle?
Without using automated equipment, the DC-9 was the easiest because it was physically loaded by the men on the ground into the bins of the airplane. And after that, we went into load of lifters when we had the A300, and that worked out okay. But we didn't stick with the A300s that long.
Okay, and on the shuttle, on the 727, of course, there really wasn't that much as far as loading was concerned, was there?
It depended the time of the week and the time of the year. Around Thanksgiving, it was a mass movement of people between New York and Boston in particular, where we just, it was unbelievable. We had long lines of people lined up to get on the airplanes back and forth, mostly to the colleges up in Boston. They'd come down to LaGuardia on a Tuesday and Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and the Sunday after Thanksgiving, it was more than we could handle.
Okay. Thanks, Frank. Dave, do you have some information about the specs on the 737?
Sure, I have the specs here, and that might be interesting to some of our listeners. The max taxi weight was 168,051 pounds. The max TO weight was 167,551 pounds. And the max landing weight was 144,000 pounds. The max zero fuel weight was 136,000 pounds. And the operational empty weight, 91,664 pounds. The max usable fuel capacity was 6,875 gallons, which is also 46,062 pounds.
Neil, I would like to mention something here.
Yes, Jim.
It appears that a great many of our listeners might not realize that when an airplane takes off, it is fully loaded, for the most part, with 168,000 pounds of fuel. But if there is a problem and the captain has to return to the base, he's got to burn off or he's got to jettison quite a bit of fuel in order to allow him to land, because the airplane would be too heavy for it to touch the ground. It could blow tires. It could hurt the landing struts in the airplane. Chuck, do you have something you can add to that?
Well, let me add that before Chuck gets on and talks about the average sales price of the aircraft. Weights are right down my alley since I flew the 727 for about 8,000 hours in all three positions. When I say all three positions, I'm talking about from the back seat, the flight engineer's location, the first officer's position on the right seat, and I flew as captain on that airplane for about 3,000 hours. The maximum takeoff weight, as Jim mentioned, is not necessarily the same as the takeoff weight, because in most cases we load the airplane so that the weight exceeds the takeoff weight by just a few thousand pounds, so that we have all the fuel we need to get to our destination. Now, the max landing weight, which in this case the 737 says 144,000 pounds, means the maximum landing weight that if something happened after our takeoff, we'd have to burn off about 20,000 pounds of fuel before we could land the airplane, because structurally the landing gear could not accept more than 144,000 pounds of weight on it. And then we come to what we call the maximum zero fuel weight, which Gay mentioned as 136,000 pounds. Well, that maximum zero fuel weight means the maximum the airplane can have, considering loading the passengers and all of the fuel necessary to reach our destination. That is what we call maximum zero fuel weight. And then, of course, without anything as far as fuel and crew members are concerned, we have an operational empty weight of 91,664 pounds. And then Gabe mentioned the maximum usable fuel capacity of 6,875 gallons, which equivalents at 6.7 pounds per gallon, being 46,062 pounds on that airplane, 737-800. Chuck, tell us about the price of the aircraft.
Neil?
Well, checking the average.
Excuse me. Hey, Chuck, just before we heard George step in. George, did I say something wrong?
No. The only thing I just wanted to perhaps clear up, I never flew the 737-800. However, I did fly the 737-200, 300, and 400. And if those aircraft had no way to dump fuel in the event that something happened and you had to return to the field for landing, what they did at my airline, they said, we'll go ahead and land it overweight. And then they did certain structural tests on the aircraft to make sure nothing was damaged. I don't know about the newer models if they have a fuel dumping system or not on them. I just wanted to bring that up.
That's good, George, because when you say fuel dumping, the 727 had the capability of dumping fuel. Several of our Eastern aircraft had dumping capability, and that meant that if you took off and all of a sudden you had an engine failure and you had to return to the airport and you had all of that fuel on from Miami or wherever to Los Angeles, and by golly, we're not going to L.A., we're coming back because we've lost an engine. So therefore, we've got to get rid of all of this fuel that we loaded on this airplane somehow. And that somehow means that we have a way of eliminating that fuel, and that is through a dump valve system. And, yeah, we're assigned an area by usually the approach control, departure control, or center, and they assign us an area that we can go out. Hopefully it's over the water, and we can dump fuel, all that fuel we can't land with for that landing weight. And we have to do that on occasion. And we have done that on occasion with Eastern Airlines, and I've done that. And some of the other pilots listening, I'm sure that may have happened to them. I hope
but,
that
Neil,
explains.
Doesn't that fuel evaporate before it hits the ground?
Oh, sure. And we're at an elevation that we are assigned to dump fuel that it does not affect the environment. Jim, thanks. Chuck, back to you about the cost of the aircraft.
Okay. Checking the average sales price of this aircraft, as reported by Boeing, is $0.3 million. And, of course, there are factors that can reduce or increase this price, such as recent aircraft maintenance checks, such as C checks, the number of flight hours on the aircraft or the engines, a number of cycles on the engine, the type of engines, the interior sections. How does this compare? Well, let's say the Boeing 787 Dreamliner so that we can get some perspective. The Dreamliner comes in at around $218 million to $257 million. Of course, there's quite a few differences in size, number of passengers carried, and so forth. See you.
Well, guys, that's been very informative about our new old airplane. Should we be concerned that this is not a new aircraft, and will it be safe to fly our first flight on the new Eastern Airlines?
I've got to jump in right here. Jim, go ahead.
I understand, of course, that the airplane that is being designed for us has been completely reworked inside and out. For all practical purposes, you should consider it a new airplane. Neil?
Appears, I don't know what delivery date from the manufacturer it was. It could be between 2002 and 2005, somewhere around there.
Es un avión nuevo.
Does anyone know that delivery date?
I think Vito is on.
Vito, do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, let's assume that it, let's assume it's 2005. Of course, that's several years ago, 9 years ago or so. And but if the aircraft has maintained all of the necessary checks that Chuck mentioned, especially the C check. The C check is a very expensive maintenance. It's almost like an overhaul of the aircraft. Not completely, that would be a D check, but a C check is very, very thorough. And it cost a few million dollars to accomplish that C check. And it's really looking through not only the engines, but the airframe itself, and it's based on a number of hours or cycles. You know, we mentioned cycles. When we hear the number of cycles of an aircraft, instead of using the number of hours that the airplane has flown, it talks about the cycle structurally as the number of times the landing gear was pulled up and the landing gear was lowered. Takeoff and landing. So that's a cycle. So in most cases, that's very, very important for a person using an airplane or purchasing an airplane or leasing an airplane to know how many cycles has this airplane been through. And so that's a very important figure that a new company like the New Eastern would consider. And they're looking for total number of cycles, and, of course, the engine time on the engine before overhaul. And most of the airlines use continuous maintenance. They pull the airplane. I don't know what the hours are, Chuck. Perhaps you can tell me the number of hours. But they pull the airplane and look through the engine by, let's call it X-ray, kind of like an X-ray of your lungs. They look through the engine itself through a kind of an X-ray machine. It's not really called an X-ray machine, but it really determines any fatigue, metal fatigue, especially metal fatigue of the innards of the aircraft engine. Chuck, would you like to comment on that since you're a mechanic?
Well, they have two types of tests. One's called in the eyes, which is the X-ray that you were talking about, or similar to an X-ray machine, and that's called non-destructive inspection. You know, that way you don't have to worry about taking the complete engine apart, but you do take a lot of it apart. And then they have another inspection. They use an endoscope that have little tiny holes in the engine that have these little plates over them, and you open up the little plate and you put this long flexible tubing in there with a little light that's on it, and you look inside and you look at all the blades and all the little
colliders
and stuff inside, and you see if the blades are cracked and everything.
Hey,
and you can go around the engine. They got those little inspection plates, they're called. And you look in there, and that's one of the ways of determining whether that engine is going to continue on. Because if you find something obviously wrong, the engine is taken off and is replaced with an overhaul engine, and it goes to the engine shop. The cycles that you were talking about, the C-checks, they are quite expensive. I know I worked on C-checks for quite a while, and I think in one of the maintenance get-togethers that we had with some of the engineers, they were talking, even back into the 80s, you were talking at least $3 to $5 million to do this to an airplane. But that is the whole encompassing of the airplane, and not just the engine or just the airframe portion of it. As you said before, the other checks, the D checks, they happen every 5 years, and then at the end of 20 years, it's supposed to be the end cycle for the airplane. Then it's completely tore apart and replaced with skins and spars and things of that sort. So it's quite expensive to do these checks. And I'm very happy that they went through the checks that you're talking about over at Shannon. I landed in Shannon one time with the Air Force. A lot of Air Force goes over there and fuels and everything. So it's quite an operation. So plane is
just
maintenance that I can even figure out, it's probably almost as safe or even as safe as a brand new airplane.
You know, Chuck, you mentioned the scope of the engine itself, looking through like an X-ray. It sounded pretty much like a colonoscopy. Can you say the word? Colonoscopy for a guy, or a gal. But at any rate, it's really just about that, you know, kind of like the human body. Sometimes we have to have some very, in a lot of cases, painful, but we don't experience the pain, but inspections of the human body to make sure that we are okay and we're okay to continue. Well, the same thing with these airplanes. And I'm sure the new
Let me interrupt you for a minute. The piece of equipment that we use is the same piece of equipment that you're talking about for men and women. It comes from the same optics company. Eastman bought that particular piece of equipment, and that's what we use to look in the engine. It's the same thing that you look in the body. So you're correct.
Man, I tell you what, I learned every once in a while I guess at something, or I throw out an uneducated guess, and lo and behold, it sounds like it might be right.
It is.
Okay. I've got a little bit of mechanical background. I have an A and E license. They call them now A and P, aircraft and power plant. But my license dated back to the precipitating. Listen to me, I can't even pronounce it.
Reciprocating.
Reciprocating. Did I say precipitating? I meant reciprocating.
Yeah. Propeller on it.
Wow. Propeller, engine-driven cylinders with pistons and valves and push rods and what have you.
Round engines today.
The round engines. Thank you, Jim. That is a very compact answer to what I was searching for. I think Eastern has looked into the best suitable airplanes for their initial operation. And it sounds like beyond that, they have their plan set out. That's going to be a very successful operational plan that we, the former Eastern employees that listen to our radio show every evening, Monday evening, we listen to for the sounds of the new Eastern Airlines. And we're very hopeful for the success of the new Eastern Airlines. And with that, we have 150 people begging to be on first flight, the very first chartered flight of the new Eastern Airlines. Cecile, can you bring us up to date on that?
Certainly. At the picnic, six people approached us and gave us their names. We have a full flight. We on the first flight, it seats 150. We're obviously are now on a standby list, and of the 150, 14 are VIPs, and of course we have a seat for Mr. Weigel and his guests, and Vito is considered a VIP with his guests, so we have a full flight. We do have a couple of cancellations, so as people cancel, I'll notify by email the people that are on standby that they are confirmed. Last week we requested phone numbers, and I got a slew of phone numbers for a lot of people. I'm still missing some phone numbers. So if you haven't sent me your phone, please send it to me. On the website, go to Neil and just log on there. And we have 15 on the standby list to date.
Wow. That's great. It really is. Good news. And we'll have some cancellations as we go beyond our show tonight. And we recognize the fact that folks have plans, that family emergencies or either family plans and whatever, that they can't go along with us. And so we'd like to know that as early as you can possibly notify Cecile that your plans have changed and you would give up your seat, and we'll assign someone else to that that seat. But we're really happy the fact that we're oversold. We do have some seats for the guests, the management, a few management seats that will be going with us. And now, what's the next step? we hear all of this. Go ahead, Cecile.
Neil, I want to mention that they notify through the website, through the link that you have on there, correct, Neil? The link says, how do they notify you as far as they're going to cancel?
Okay. They can notify us on our website, which is the Eastern Airlines Radio Show.com. They can go to Contact Us, which is right there on the home page. If they log in to EALRadioShow.com, they'll see Contact Us and simply tell us that, hey, I wish I could be on the first flight, but plans interrupt that reservation, so please take us off the list, and we'll be doing that. So that's all you need to do. We do also have, and I will have that. I think I've got part of it designed now that we can take them on our website, and we'll have an area there that will show the number of seats available. But I haven't completely figured that part out, so I'll be putting that on the website. By the way, the website is www.ealradioshow.com. Cecile?
Neil, one of the things I would like to mention for the benefit of our listeners who are not aware of the transition from propeller-driven aircraft to the jets, and the fact that the propeller-driven aircraft engines needed much more attention than the jet engines do. I remember the, I think it was 30, 60, 90, 120, and 240-hour examinations that were needed on the propeller-driven engines. Chuck, you can check me on that. But now, of course, with the jet engines, they need far less maintenance. Is that right, Chuck?
That's correct. If I remember in one of my classes that I went to, I was mainly jet person, but it took 7 mechanics to every 1 mechanic on a jet engine for a radial engine to stay in service.
Wow.
So that's one of the things that I remember.
That saved the airline industry millions of dollars in maintenance fees. And, of course, we have to thank the federal government and their bringing on board the jet engine for use by the commercial airlines.
Okay, very good. We do have, yes, Cecile?
One other thing. I'm trying to acknowledge everyone that has sent me their phone number, and I say received. If I haven't acknowledged it, that means I didn't get it. And we're Neil and Jim and I are also going to periodically send a blast email to everybody that's on the list, keeping you all informed and acknowledging that you are confirmed on the first flight.
Very good. Thanks so much, Cecile. You're doing a great job. What I was about to say, we have got several people on our board. I'm a producer, not much of a producer, but at any rate, I can't figure out this board here. We've got so many area codes that are showing up on our board that I don't know where to begin. But if we've left you out in our conversation tonight, we've got time to hear from you. And we do have several area codes. We've got one from 770. Would you like to add a comment to our show tonight?
Yeah, hi, Neil. It's Sonny Smithwick here. I tried to get on the other number, but it was all full, so I had to get on the way. I had to pay for it tonight. But so evidently you have a big audience out there.
Oh, tremendous.
I did want to say something on the flight, Neil, if you don't mind. You know, if that's going to be a charter for former Eastern employees, they get about $5,000 an hour for a charter now, so it'd be $10,000, which I think you were talking about $100 each way, which should really be in the area that they should be able to get that for $100 down or $100 back for $200.
Sonny?
Because that is a going rate now, about $5,000 an hour.
Well,
it's a two-hour trip
that,
down there.
That, would that make the company some money?
It would, but you know, they're going to take, I would assume they would take one airplane down there. Now, they're not going to leave it down there while you're doing the Eastern thing. They're going to have a group coming back out of there, and then they will come back down and pick you up. They're not going to leave that airplane sitting there for 2 days. I can
right.
tell you that. That won't happen. But if you can figure it into, to me, this is going to be a media event. And that should be the whole big thing of all the Eastern employees going down. It's a media event, and the airline should take advantage of that. It's not something that they're doing for us. We're doing it for them, I think. You know, it's
Sonny,
going to be a huge advertisement for Eastern Airlines.
Sonny, have you ever heard of anything like this happening before that you can recall?
Well, I tell you, I was with the startup of, after Eastern, I was with the startup of Carnival Airlines. And we had a certificate with one airplane. And they were flying, they started flying one airplane. And as they grew, they're doing the same thing that Eastern, that the new Eastern is going to do. They're going to start off as a charter, going from one place to the other, and then as they get into it, they'll do they get into the 121, and I think down the road that they'll be very successful at it. But just like Carnival, they had a name recognition, as does Eastern, but they didn't want to make any money because they were making too much on the cruise line. Eastern is different. I think Eastern will make this happen.
Very good. Very good. Any comments from our guests?
I do think the airplane, from what I understand, the airplane won't be here till what, December the 1st?
We haven't gotten a date yet, Neil. We're waiting for a date to come about. It should be any day now, I understand, from Ed Regal. So.
Now, I understand when the airplane gets here, let's assume December the 1st, that's what I heard. They still have to go through a lot of things with the FAA. I mean, that's going to take months to do that. So I would probably be looking at something like February, and that's just a wag.
Okay. Folks, Sonny also is with the FAA, and so he's been there. He's been. I'm sure with the startup carriers, brand new startup carriers, and I've been with a couple of startup carriers, and I've experienced the same thing. And yeah, there are a lot of hoops that we have to jump through in order to get that final FAA blessing. Which is in the
just one other comment, Neil, on that. If I did talk to South Florida this week, they have submitted the manuals, and this is a process. They submitted the manuals, they sent them back after review. They had to adjust them a little bit, sent them back, and this is just a give and take type thing. So just to approve the manuals. So
yeah,
that's where
yeah.
they are right now. So I would certainly think early next year.
Okay. And that's what we're looking at, folks. We're talking about February or March, which we mentioned, I think, as possible dates for our first charter, which we call first flight, is in February or March. So we've got a number of people kind of standing by to see if this is going to happen, which it will happen. But at what date, we can't say. But we're hoping that it will be in February, well, as early as January, we hope, but in February and March. And that's what our hopes are at this point. And we're kind of guesstimating right now without really talking to the officials of the new Eastern Airlines, namely Ed Wiegel. So, Jim Hart, if you can get him on our show, we'd certainly be happy to hear him tell us about the new Eastern Airlines.
I'm going to try, Neil.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, I'd like to kind of close out our show tonight by saying that this is Veterans Day tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Veterans Day. And I'm sure we all have our thoughts about the folks that protect us every day, 24/7. Those folks that are out there protecting our rights and our liberties. Does anyone have a comment about tomorrow, which is Veterans Day?
Yes, Neil, this is Jim. I served 5 years in Korea, I know what the fellows and girls are going through. I was away from my family for over 3 years, and it's just unbelievable the esprit de corps that a lot of these members have. I take my hat off to them. I'm a 58-year member of the American Legion, and I support every one of our veterans organizations. Good luck, everyone.
And Neil, this is George.
George.
Yeah, I just want to bring up a really nice story. The school I graduated from, Archbishop Molloy High School, one of my classmates there was a gentleman by the name of Lewis Willett, and he served in Vietnam. He was killed in Vietnam and was subsequently awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. And a number of my classmates had wondered, I mean, he was in like the Hall of Fame in high school, but they never had a special ceremony for him until the day before yesterday. And I went back to the school, and they honored Lewis for his Medal of Honor. And it was one of the nicest, also one of the saddest things I've ever been to. But on the other hand, it was very nice after so many years, after 50 years, that he was finally recognized at the school. And there were probably 150 to 200 people in attendance for it.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Neil, this is Chuck. As most of you know, I'm a 26-year veteran, the Air Force, and a Vietnam veteran. And I'd just like to remind everybody out there and listening on the radio that if you come across somebody who's served, just tell them thank you. That means a lot to them. Take it back.
You know, on Veterans Day, put out your flags. Cheer the marchers at the parades that you go to and go to tributes. But when you wake up the next day, November 12th, remember that it's still Veterans Day for our veterans.
Right.
And it will be every day of their lives. Now, that was from General Colin Powell, USA retired.
Very good.
And we like to remember, especially tomorrow, raise your flag if you have a flag. Small or large, raise that flag and salute those folks that have gone before. And that means all the way back to those fought for liberty that we enjoy today. Jim?
Yes, Neil, I hear the sign-off music. Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We'll be back with you next week, same time, and same station, www.ealradioshow.com. And like one of our popular commercials for Eastern, we've had to earn our wings every day. We hope you'll once again fly Eastern Radio. As we bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk with former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. when Flight 190 departs the gate. Be on board for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines from all the gang here at our studio and remote locations. We all say now all together, good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night.
Good night.
Next week.